Big Book Study Group's Thursday Night Alcoholics and God Speaker Step Series. Let's have our joke now. Kat, please. Kat, alcoholic?
Yeah.
So a scientist runs into an AA meeting and explains, "We did it. We found a medical cure for alcoholism. All you have to do is take one pill daily and you're cured." Slowly, a hand raises back, and the man says, "What happens if you take two?"
Thank you, Kat. I'm a recovered alcoholic. My name is Kelly. Thanks for joining us tonight. In a minute, we're going to start our two-minute meditation, so please take a moment to get situated. Please turn off all devices that make noise and that will distract others. Take this time to get connected to God. Let the craziness of the day drift away and ask God to help you stay focused on the step study tonight. Is everybody ready?
Yes.
If so, let's start the meditation.
Thank you.
let's go ahead and say the fog light prayer. If you don't know it, you can follow along here or on the papers behind your chairs. God, God, let your love shine through me like a fog light, so those who are lost, sick, and dying can find your love through me. There's a solution from the Big Book, page 17. The tremendous fact for every one of us is that we have discovered a common solution. We have a way out on which we can absolutely agree and upon which we can join in brotherly and harmonious action. This is the great news this book carries to those who suffer from alcoholism. I've asked Alex to read Appendix 2, Spiritual Experience. We read this because the main purpose of the 12 steps is to have one, so it is kind of important to know what one is.
My name is Alex, and I am an alcoholic. This is a spiritual experience. The terms spiritual experience and spiritual awakening are used many times in this book, which upon careful reading shows that the personality change sufficient to bring out recovery for alcoholism has manifested itself among us in many different forms. Yet it is true that our first print gave many readers the impression that these personality changes or religious experiences must be in the nature of sudden and spectacular upheavals. Happily for everyone, the conclusion is erroneous. In the first few chapters, a number of sudden revolutionary changes are described. Though it was not our intention to create such an impression, many alcoholics have nevertheless concluded that in order to recover, they must acquire an immediate and overwhelming God consciousness, followed at once by a vast change in feeling and outlook. Among our rapidly growing membership of thousands of alcoholics, such transformations though frequent, are by no means the rule. Most of our experiences are what the psychologist William James calls the educational variety, because they develop slowly over a period of time. Quite often, friends of newcomers are aware of the difference long before he is himself. He finally realizes that he has undergone a profound alteration in his reaction to life, that such a change could hardly have been brought about by himself alone. What often takes place in a few months could seldom have been accomplished by years of self-discipline. With few exceptions, our members find that they have tapped an unsuspected inner resource which they presently identify with their own conception of a power greater than themselves. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God conscious. Most emphatically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems in the light of our experiences can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by any attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial. We find that no one need have difficulty with spirituality of the program. Willingness, honesty, and open-mindedness are the essentials of recovery, but these are indispensable. There is a principle which is a bar against all information, which is proof against all arguments, and which cannot fail to keep a man in everlasting ignorance. That principle is contempt prior to investigation. Herbert Spencer.
Thank you, Alex. Please refrain from disturbing others by talking or constantly getting up and sitting back down. This is a tech-free meeting, so set your phones to airplane meeting mode or just turn them off. It is my pleasure to now introduce Marion for her second session, and we're looking forward to a beautiful message from God through her.
I'm Marion. I'm a recovered alcoholic. And great job, Ms. Kelly. It's one of the joys of this fellowship is watching people come in and give their life to God and get that fog-light glow. Kelly's got that fog-light glow, and so many of the members of this home group. And it's just an honor and a privilege to be a part of it. I want to welcome anyone who's new to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm so glad you're here. I hope you feel at home here. My sobriety date is November 11th, 1989, and I have a sponsor named Polly P., and she's got a sponsor, just the qualifications. This is my home group, and lots of happy, great faces here tonight. Kind of where I am currently is it's been a bit of a rough week, and whenever I do these, it just seems like God brings me to, you know, he just brings me to that step or that place, you know, to come to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. And it's like, I feel like I always get to kind of live it live. It's not like I can go through the book and pour through the book and find a bunch of little points that are just going to just be the best thing since sliced bread. But God, like, takes me currently into that place. It's unreal. And I love that because, you know, my prayer before the meeting tonight was just like, God, just let me express your heart to your children. You know, let me be that light. Let me be a person that, you know, that carries a message of depth and weight and whatever that is. And I know in and of myself, I screw this up on a regular basis. And so to talk about my week a little bit, you know, I mean, even just currently today, you know, I had a situation that came up that kind of got to me. And there was a reaction from my soul. And I did not like it. It was judgmental. It was judgmental. And it was just a conversation I was having with Peter. And when I, before I even, the things came out of my mouth, I caught myself and I was just like, wow, where does that come from? And, you know, the deal is in our alcoholism was, you know, we have a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. I can tell you, standing here with 29 years of sobriety, this thing will always be there to grab me. And instantly in that judgment and instantly in that place, what turned and happened was I instantly felt like, you know, that voice in my head was Marion, you know, all these judgments on myself. See, as I judged, I then began to judge myself in the comments that I had made. And it grieved my heart. It grieved my heart. And I know that as I walk with God and as I do this journey, and Peter talks about, you know, the narrow road we walk. You know, thank God I'm awakened enough in my spirit to go, you know what, God, this is your kid. This is your kid I'm talking about. That's not okay. You know, and in turn, also that voice in my head that wants to condemn me, you know, and I know that's where my disease lies. I know where that centers. That's where it centers. It's not a, and I say this to my sponsees all the time, where it's not about, you know, a drink and a drug anymore, but yeah, it is. If that voice can hold on to me long enough, if it can get me into that place of sorrow, I came up while I was telling some kids this week about justifiable selfishness. Justifiable selfishness and my opinions. You know, we've had a series of things happen in our community where we lost a young man this week that was very dear to our hearts. And you know, that thing, man, it took me down. It took me down and I couldn't move. Like, I literally had gotten home and I was so full of grief and I was so full of pain that It was immobilizing. And in that, in those places, and in those dark places, and in those places, God, you know, there's this, you know, I love worship songs. There's a song that's, you know, fear doesn't stand a chance when I stand in your love, God. Fear doesn't stand a chance. My self-condemnation doesn't stand a chance. My critical spirit, that critical spirit that I hear, doesn't stand a chance in the light of God. It doesn't stand a chance. And what I can tell you by that is it's just, you know, this thing, it's cunning, baffling, powerful. It rests. It waits. It wants to take. I mean, Jim, for God's sake, is it Jim, Fred, one of them, you know, milk and whiskey, you know, whiskey and with milk, you know, I mean, like literally, you know, do you think that was his drink of choice? You know, I'm a milk and whiskey drinker, you know, it's like, where does that come from? You know, or I go to work on Tuesday, and you should have been at work on Monday, and for a firm I once owned, but now it's like a firm I work for, you know, a little pride, a little ego, and a little drink. Little pride, a little ego, little drink. A little drink of pride, a little drink of fear, a little drink of selfishness, a little drink of ego, a little drink. And my sponsor talks tons about that, and I just know that, you know, thank God for God, you know, even in that conversation in the middle of the day today, it was like, please, you know, making a, you know, direct amends, this is part of it, you know, making a direct amends and being able to go, thank you, God, that you crash in, that your reckless love, that you invade my life, that somewhere in this, in this mind, this magnificent, magnifying mind that wants to take me out, that somehow God, by his infinite grace and his infinite mercy, over and over and over again, gets me to the place where I can come to believe. And, you know, how that started for me in the first place was, you know, I was telling some folks about this week, you know, it's after 29 years of sobriety, you know, I have this little revelation this week, and it's for me, and maybe it's for you too. You know, I gave my life to God on my knees October 18th, 1988, and I surrendered to alcohol on November 11th, 1989. And one thing that I realized this week was how in line that was with the big book, because it talks about when I overcome the spiritual, when I am straightened out spiritually, I overcome emotionally and physically. And what God did for me that day is he saved my soul. And that's what he did, and he saved my soul first in order to get everything else in line. And something changed in my thinking. Something changed in here where, you know, I talk about it being tormented, and I talk about, you know, the obsession, and I couldn't live with that anymore. I couldn't live with that anymore. I couldn't live with a belly full of booze, and I couldn't live with this heart full of God. Just like today, you know, I spit out this judgmental thing, and I'm like, I can't live like that today. And that's what our journey is like, this God. It's like if God is either everything or he's nothing, you know, I can't have a middle of the road solution for Marion W. I can't. I somehow, the closer and closer that we get to God, and that doesn't mean I'm super close to God. I'm not saying that. But the more as I continue this journey, the more I understand and the more I realize how absolutely screwed I am without God. In every breath that I take, in every movement that I make, in everything that I do, how I, you know, how I honor God's children, and how I honor God, and how I honor my workplace, and how I, you know, put my grocery cart back at the grocery store. You know, it's all of that, because I can't afford for it to be anything less than that. I can't. And you know, when God first started working on my heart, when I was sitting in that little treatment center in Bellingham, Washington, and, you know, and I start seeing things for the first time, you know, for the first time, I'm sitting in detox. The two drunks came in. That's when the mind said, oh my gosh, here's some people talking about what this book talks about. You know, they spoke my language. And that's what I love about Alcoholics Anonymous. We speak my language. And I don't care. My friends became there was a 16-year-old friend named Mary, and she married Colin. And Mary came in when she was 15. And that girl's still sober. I don't even know. She's probably 27 years sober today. And she was my best friend. And CB with the drunken, puffy red nose was my best friend. And there were bikers, and there were Native Americans, and there were, you know, it was just this common journey that we commenced on, you know, that we went for, that we had, you know, that I could walk in the door and I could breathe and I could be a part of. And God started using you guys. You know, I said to a woman I work with the other day, you know, instead of looking for those things that are so different about each other, look at those things that are the same. What's the same? What's the same? You know, the spiritual malady, all the things that we deal with. And so they come in and they talk to me, and it was the most glorious day of my life. Because I knew there was a way out from under. You know, my broken spirit knew that there was something else for me. And I'm so grateful for that today. I'm so grateful. And then we started, you know, it's November. We started walking to the park across the street in the morning. I think we were already doing it before that, but I kind of don't remember. But I'm Pat R. and I, we always talk about the similarities of what happened, you know, like when he says he was driving down the sawgrass and he saw the sunset. And he was like, wow, do you see that? And I remember going to this park and the leaves were the huge evergreen trees. If you ever get a chance to go to Washington, the evergreen state, it really is that green and that amazing. And I'm proud. And you see those trees and you see the fallen leaves and you see the reds and you see the oranges and you see, you can smell the air. And it's like, I'm telling people around me, do you see these trees? Can you feel that air? Wow, isn't this great? You know, and my spirit was awakened, and it was, you know, it's like trying to describe a spiritual journey to someone. It's like, this is my experience. You know, this is my experience. And you'll have your experience, you know? And we'd get on the swings and we'd swing so high. And I don't know about you guys, but it had been a lot of years since I was a kid and I got on a swing set. But swinging so high where you know that you're going to flip over the top, you know, that kind of thing. You never really do, but you think you do. Think you're going to. Stuff like that, you know? The first woman coming into the treatment center that was the only woman I knew that was sober besides my little sister, and she was going to be my temporary sponsor. And all these little coincidences started happening, and that's how I started to believe. And I told you this last week about the little Native American woman who said the right thing at the right time. And these were the things that started building that this place inside of me, this trust inside of me, and this hope. This hope that I could live, and this hope that I could do something different. And just all those little things that become part of our miracle. And I was telling someone this week too about having a knowing today, no matter what, that no matter where I go, God is. And I'm never without that. It may be clouded by circumstances. It may be my selfishness getting in the way of things. You know, so Monday night I'm at home. And I'm wanting to sit in my sorrow. And I'm wanting to sit into my justifiable selfishness. And you know, grief is grief. It's true. Grief is grief. It's true, and it hurts. But at the same time, there's that piece of us as alcoholics, and we have that on steroids that, oh, I'll just sit in my sorrow. But something in me was just like, okay, I'm going to go to a meeting. I just need an open share meeting. I just need a crappy cup of coffee. And good old bottom line in Deerfield Beach, Florida, I need to go with no makeup. I need to go in sweats. And I just need to go in the door. And I need an open share meeting. Because sometimes that's what I need. And I'm telling you, I sat there and you talk about believing. You talk about, I'm heartbroken. And I'm sitting there and it's like, I drug my butt. And that's why I wasn't at home group Monday night. And I'm really sorry. I just couldn't drive myself down. And I apologize for that. I love you guys. But I just couldn't. I had driven all over that day with work. I'd been out to Davie and out to Parkland and all this stuff. And I just didn't have it in me to get down here. But I sat in that meeting and, you know, there was a couple women there that were brand new. And they were sharing. And I honestly, you know, I experienced, and this was my first experience with God, was, you know, we talk about the fellowship of the Spirit. But what I experienced Monday night was the spirit of the fellowship. I don't know one word that they said. I don't know one word that they said. I know that it opened with a prayer. I know that it closed with a prayer. And I know how it works was read. And I know I had a really bad cup of coffee. And somewhere in the middle of that meeting, I was able to just take a breath. And I was reminded of years ago. I was reminded of 29 years ago of dragging our butt. You know, they used to say, bring your butt and, or what is it? Bring your mind and your butt will follow. I can't remember how it goes. But, you know, it was kind of like the mind of whatever. I don't even remember how it goes. But, dude, I did that. I did that Monday and I did it again on Wednesday. Because Wednesday was, you know, it was still kind of on me. And what I know about my life and what I know about my life with God is that over and over again, God will come into my life at the darkest moments, at the most hopeless moments, at the most beautiful moments. And he'll just give me, like Mickey says, a cookie or whatever, you know, he'll just give me a cookie and I know it's going to be okay. I know it's going to be okay. And so in the early days, so this started, the awakened spirit happened. You know, I was driving this little old Audi car. We bought it for like $700 and we were going to go up and over the North Cascades Highway in Washington. I feel like I'm going to ad for Washington State tonight, but, and I'd driven it many times, and we'd camped over across the mountains many times. And, you know, we just go through the motions of life. And I had my three little kids in the car. And I remember just going up and over this mountain pass and looking down at the beautiful river, the Columbia River going through, and the mountain peaks, and literally having to come to a stop and pull off the side of the road because for the first time in my whole entire life, I saw God's beauty around me, and I knew the meaning of the word breathtaking. And it literally took my breath away. Every turn, it was getting more pretty and more pretty and more pretty. And I thought that I was going to like overdose on pretty, you know? It was literally taking my breath away. And I'm so grateful for that. And you know, I'd go into an AA meeting and I'd think, oh my God, if I share this, they're going to think I'm crazy. And somebody would open their mouth and they'd say, you know, just the right thing at the right time. You know, C.B. McLaren, a gentleman that's passed on. And in my old hometown, a lot of those old timers have passed on. And what's going to happen for you in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous is hold on to those old timers. Sit with them. Sit and have a cup of coffee. Go to the meeting before the meeting. Hang out after the meeting. Get around them and just sit with them. And I would sit with CB and I would sit with Dixie and I would sit with these old farts that I always thought I was going to be like too good for. It's like, you know, like I told you before, it's like we go to pie on Friday nights And the first time I ever did that, I'm like, I am a loser. It's Friday night and I'm going to go have pie. And I called, you know, called home and I'm like, yeah, well, these losers are going to have pie, you know. And just learning to be okay in my skin and learning to be around these alcoholics and learning to have fun and laugh for the first time. Like remembering even the first times of sitting with a group of drunks and laughing that, oh my God, you know, coming from the seamless hopelessness that I came from into a place of joy. You know, me and CB were buds. You know, I walked into a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. He's the very first person that looked at me and he said, "Hi, Marianne, nice to see you." And I was like, he was chairing the meeting that day, and I remember that day just looking at him and thinking, President of AA knows my name, you know, and I'm like, man, I've arrived now. This is good, you know, this is really, really good, you know, and just the way the fellowship embraced me and all that. So these are the ways that God got my attention, and it can be in small things, and it can be in big things. It can be these big, enormous things where I just go, you know, go to a meeting and say, "Oh my God, I made my kids breakfast today," and they'd be like, "Yes." You know, I went to the grocery store and I didn't get mad at anybody. Yes, you know, like all these little small victories and all these small things that God was doing in my life and learning to, you know, first commitment being, you know, CB appointed me, you know, my first service position. I was the ashtray washer, Northwest Group. We had ashtrays and that was my job. And at first, you know, it's like, at first that job was like, oh great, you know, this is what my life has come to. And then the other part was like that dishy little soapy sink and my pile full of ashtrays and washing those ashtrays and putting them on the table and becoming a part of that group and becoming a part of something that was a greater good, that was bigger than me. That was bigger than me, that I didn't have to do it on my own. It didn't have to be just me, you know? And it was beautiful. It was beautiful. I'm going to take another drink and breathe. So our big book talks about where do we find God, and where we find God is deep down inside in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. The fundamental idea of God. And, you know, I remember as a little girl thinking, you know, my dad would go away and he'd worked in Alaska. And in the summers, we'd be home with drunk mom and I'd go to bed at night and I'd wear my dad's t-shirt because I missed him so much. And I can imagine what that thing must have smelled like because it was like his construction t-shirt. And I remember laying in my bed and missing my dad and talking to God. You know, did you guys ever do that as a child? Ever know that there was like your buddy, that it was deep down inside you? You know, I had that. And as I grew in my alcoholism and as I grew up, I started you know, as my alcoholism came and as I started feeling like crap about myself, as I started comparing myself to other people, as I started looking at the girls who had stuff and that I didn't have stuff, as that started happening, it started causing that separation between me and God. It started causing it, you know? And so I remember just feeling blocked from him, that I wasn't enough for him, that God only comes to those fancy little girls, that God doesn't come for people like me. He comes for other people. You know, if my mom did this, then God would love me. Or if my dad did this, then God would love me. If I had clean clothes, then God would love me. Things like that, you know. And just clouded and more clouded by circumstances and clouded and more clouded as I picked up a drink, as I picked up a drug, you know. And the separation began from him. You know, I remember many times just crying out to God you know those foxhole prayers we do at first, you know? I'd go to bed and I'd have other substances in my body and I'd feel like the whole house is rocking from my heartbeat. You know, the foxhole prayers at first, you know, being able to cry out to God and go, oh my God, I'm going to die. Save me through this. Save me through this. Save me through this, God. And the next day, what would happen was I would come to, and I'd be like, whew, made it through the night, but off to the races I'd go again. You know, the book talks about not being able to bring to mind with sufficient force. And I couldn't bring it to mind. You know, I'd start the morning by making sure that I made a whole bunch of phone calls or talking to the people I love around me and telling them, you know, how sorry I am. I went usually directly to a ninth step amends. I don't know if you guys are like me, but I was always sorry and I was always really sorry and I was always going to swear off forever and I was going to quit with or without a solemn oath, switching from scotch to brandy, smoking the weed before I drank or, you know, whatever it was, always trying to find those different combinations of how I could make alcohol. I was obsessed. And it talks about more about alcoholism. It says the great obsession of every alcoholic, the great obsession. And I was obsessed with how to do this right. You know, how to get the right combination down. If I could just get some little white things from my little sister to go to bed at night after I got myself all up in the air with that stuff that Mike likes and, you know, and drinking, you know, right? But I literally, and when it talks in our books are, here's the methods we tried, I can tell you the methods I tried. Like I really learned that if I smoked something before I drank, I was better off. Because then I could drink longer. But if I drank before I smoked something, then I was going to be passing out. And then there goes the fun. Right? So the obsession was to get as much alcohol in my body as soon as I could. I don't know if you guys are like me, but I'd go to keggers and if I got like too much beer in my belly and I got too bloated, I'd puke it up so I could drink more. Just so you know that normal people don't do that. They don't stand with their red Solo cup next to the keg the whole time because this is where your social position will be. That's where it has to be, is right there. Have to go pee, save my spot, you know, things like that. I mean, that's the kind of drinking I did. I was the girl going down to, you know, I was always borrowing people's cars. Like people, my girlfriends in high school, like I didn't have a car. I didn't have a license till I was 22 years old. They didn't need that, you know. And I was always borrowing cars. And we'd have these keggers down at Clayton Beach. And I'd be borrowing a car. I'd call my girlfriends. Hey, Tammy, Cindy, I'm coming to get you. What are you driving? Well, I got a Dodge Dart tonight, you know. Or, you know, one time I pull up in this Dodge Dart with a fuzzy dice and a fuzzy dash that I borrowed from this girl at McDonald's where I worked. And they're like, never knew what I was going to pick them up in, you know, keg in the back of the car. I've got the flashlight, get everybody down there, you know, because that became my identity, man. That became my identity. I had to, when Party Girl was on at 15 years old, it was on, man. It was on, game on. Marion's got a new identity. Marion's this thing, the panacea for my ills inside my gut, man. I'm going to be okay. You know, I'm going to be okay. And if anybody needed to know where the party was at, all they had to do is find me. You know, but in the whole time, here's, you know, I can still look at women on Facebook that I went to high school with and they're still partying. It's like, dude, I was doing that at 15 with you guys and you're still doing that, you know? And as I got worse and worse and worse, from the get, I was the drunk. From the get-go, I'm the one that's causing the trouble, you know, borrowing cars, ripping out transmissions, you know, things like that. Well, I only did that once and I did have to make an amends for that. But, you know, all that stuff. But during that time in the early years, man, it was working. It was working. You know, Native Americans call alcohol spirit. And I have a disease of my spirit, and I filled my spirit with that. Until somewhere, my friend Esther, who's my mom's cousin, who opened Dry Dock in Bellingham, Esther and Blair, like, I got to tell you a story about Esther and Blair. So Esther was my mom's best friend, and she's a cousin, and she's from Alaska, and she's like as round as she was tall. She's like a real Alaskan alley, awesome woman. And she kind of disappears out of my mom's life, and she's getting sober. So what does she give me? She gives me this picture of my mother in September 1959, my mom's super pregnant, sitting on a log, smoking a cigarette with a Rainier beer in her hand. And I was like, you're pregnant with me, Mom. You know, you're pregnant with me, Mom. You know, and how did I get on Esther? There was someplace that was going with that. Oh, Esther, yeah. So Esther used to talk about, you know, like somewhere, Marion, I don't know how and where it happens, but somewhere we cross this invisible line. Somewhere we cross the line where it's fun and it's great and it's feeding the spirit, and there's somewhere where we don't know where that line crosses. If you have the disease of alcoholism like I do, there's somewhere where it becomes the obsession, where it becomes the mind that takes over. You know, it becomes that. And somewhere along that line, it did. And somewhere along that line, it was destroying my spirit. It wasn't feeding my spirit. It was destroying it. And so, where am I going to go next? So that's where we find God. We find God deep down within, inside of us. Why do we need to find God? Well, we need to find God because we can't do it on our own. That's the simple fact, that I couldn't do it on my own. My great obsession to drink like normal people, my great obsession, obsessed with it. And how I was doing that when I did try to quit, when I'd swear off with or without a solemn oath, when I'd come to in the morning and I'd call everybody and tell them how sorry I was and so excited that I'm going to be sober now. And, you know, you should get on my team and go, yay, Marion, I'm so glad for you because you were really a jerk last night, you know, or whatever, you know, that somehow I couldn't bring that thought to mind. By 4 o'clock in the afternoon or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Thank God I never thought of whiskey and milk, you know, but who knows that that thought doesn't come someday, you know? But it would be the same old threadbare idea that I could do that, right? And so somewhere in me on that day on November 11th, 1989, something came into my mind, and a thought that came to my mind that had never came before. And I love to talk about, Mike gave me one of the original versions of Our Southern Friend, and I love that. And it's just such a beautiful, beautiful story, and it's been edited a few times, and, you know, they took out a lot of the color and all that. But one of the things that our Southern Friend talks about is the voice of God, and he's talking about the voice of God being, we have thousands and thousands of thoughts a day, right? Thousands and thousands of thoughts a day. And there's this thought, he describes it, a thought with a voice. A thought with a voice. And that day, that moment, that day, another voice came to me and says, go to treatment. You know? And another thought comes, give your sister a call. So where does that come from? That isn't something I earned. That isn't something I deserved. In the midst of, you know, looking in the mirror that day, the first thought of God at all is being that gift of desperation. I was giving the gift of desperation. And by the way, and I said this last week, and I know this for sure today, you know, the gift of desperation, I can't give you that. I can't give that to an alcoholic. If you're desperate, I can help you. If you're not, I can't. You know, and I thank God for that. You know, that's one of the prayers I have for people today is God, please make them desperate enough to get this. Make them desperate enough that they're willing to go to any length. And in any length is in any length. And any length is God, I'm going to leave my three little kids. I'm going to go to this treatment center for 30 days, which in my thought, I thought I was abandoning my children. I thought, what a horrible mother I am. How could I be doing this thing? But the thought came and I listened. And I know that today for me, when it comes to faith, when it comes to that power, I know that faith without works today is dead. And I believe that with my whole heart. What I did Monday night was I got my butt and I moved it. What I did Wednesday night was I got my butt and I moved it. And that doesn't mean my heart's still not heavy and my heart's still not sad about our beautiful friend Brian. It's sad. But I have to move. I have to be in action. I have to pick up the phone. I have to talk to my sponsees. I have to, and some of them didn't hear from me this week, you know. Sorry, Shannon. I think I may have done that with Heather too. But, you know, but I did move through the things that I could. I moved through the things that I could. Because I know today for me, that it's like even when I stand here today, you know, to pick up this kit of spiritual tools that have been laid at my feet. Laid at my feet. Guys, if this collective room got what we really deserved, you know, jails, institutions, death, things like that, you know, being here by grace, being here by mercy, being here by coming to the place in this foundation of a life of God, this foundation of a life of surrender, this foundation of a place that, you know, my life is not my own. My life is a life that you know, they said, the old timers used to say, you know, God brings you to AA and AA brings you to God. And that's the truth in my life today. But it doesn't stop at, oh, it happened in November of 1989. It's a continuing story. It's a continuing surrender. It's a continuing to seek this God with the desperation of a drowning woman. I'm a drowning woman. And where my head went on Monday night and where my head went on Wednesday night was morbid reflection. Where it went was, is Marion, just, you know, take a time out and feel sorry for yourself a little bit. You know, it's not about me anyway, you know. And Peter's teacher, God, I listened to the CD of his and I wanted to crack him one, you know. But he's talking about, you know, even in somebody passing, that we as alcoholics, because we're selfish and we're self-centered and we can make things about us, he says, even in that extreme, we're thinking about us. When this person's been embraced by the light, they might have struggled the struggles of struggles of struggles of struggles. And is sitting right there right now having a good old party with JC, you know? Wow. But the way that we want to make life about us, pour me, pour me, pour me another drink. Another drink of pride. Another drink of selfishness. Another drink of ego. Another drink of any of those things, you know? So I can't give you my journey. I can tell you my stories. But this is yours, man. Your relationship with God is your relationship with God. And it's yours. And it might be in butterflies. And it might be in trees. And it might be in feathers. And it might be in race cars. I mean, whatever. You know? And that's the beauty of it. It's like, it gets to be our own. It gets to be our own. So I'm grateful for that today, and I'm grateful for this relationship with God I have. And even in that relationship, you know, coming to believe. I mean, you guys, you can't tell me. Like, I think of the days back in my drinking when there was so, like, how did I struggle with believing in a God? I don't know about you guys, but did you ever end up in places or with people or in situations that you just went, oh my God, how did I live through that? How did I live through that? Like, God saved me a thousand, that's probably an exaggeration, but God saved me numerous times in my alcoholism. The old timers used to say, God loves drunks because we're just so fun to watch, you know? You know, we're just so fun to watch. Did you guys ever have an angel pick you up in a car when you were, you know, or somebody showing up at the right minute at the right time when you're just about ready to bust somebody over the head with a beer bottle? Or I'm making up stories now, but somebody, this is somebody's story. Collectively, I know your stories, you know? So if God's for us, if we're so fun to watch, and every one of us is sitting, see, I believe this God so much. Like, here it is. You know, it's January 10th, and we're in South Florida, beautiful South Florida. Las Solas is right there, okay? There's a drink 2 minutes away from us. And you cannot tell me there is one person in this room, I will not ever believe it. If you're a drunk like I'm a drunk, you're sitting in this room. And so, it ain't just gravity keeping your butt sitting there. And it's not like I'm the most magnificent speaker in the world. Hi. Or whatever, you know, whatever that is. You know, something's keeping us in this chair. Something's keeping us here. How miraculous is that, guys? I mean, Fort Lauderdale would look a little different right now if we were out on Las Solas, I would think. They probably already have it shut down, barricaded, and handcuffs out like crazy, right? So I don't want to ever take that for granted. I don't want to ever take for granted that mercy and that grace. It's not like puffed up, prideful, 29 years sober, marrying, well, she's got it. You know, no, this afternoon I didn't have it. This afternoon I was sober and what came out of my mouth was yucky. And I don't want to fail God today. I don't want to fail you today. This is a life of surrender, man. I don't want a medium middle of the road solution. I don't want Marion to be freaking dancing on Las Solas tonight, drinking Red Bulls till 3 a.m. and you know, coming up here and then telling you how freaking spiritual I am with a couple boyfriends on the side or something. You know what I mean? That's, I don't want to live like that today. And I wasn't like that anyway, but you know, some of us are. I just told somebody's story. No, again, right? But so God chooses us and God brings us here and God takes our stories and he takes our deepest, darkest moments and he turns them in to these glorious stories that help save another person. You know, collectively, every person in this room is going to affect at least 10 people. I mean, that was a little number, a little, and there must be, on this podcast, there's 20,000 people. So it's going to affect 300,000 people. You know what I mean? Peter says this, that, you know, we're the only people that we can tell somebody the most God-awful, horrible things in our life and, you know, sit down with somebody and tell them the most God-awful things in our life and we go, hey, here's my number. Give me a call. How about that? That's where I fit. That's where I belong. That's where I belong. You know, and I'm just grateful to be in the center of his will, move out of it a little bit, and realize what a wreck I am when I'm outside of it. And I don't want to be there, and I don't want to stay there, and I don't want to take the chance of having a whiskey and milk sound good to me. You know, I don't want to take that chance. Ew, no, or anything for that matter. So if the disease centers in its mind and the only thing that's going to help that is a spiritual solution, I want that today. And I want to seek that with everything I am. Because I don't have alcoholism. I have alcoholism. And I may be recovered from a hopeless state of mind and body, but I also know that I have a disease that's waiting there for me. had 29 years. So if you have 29 days, great. If you have 4 days, great. If you have whatever, you know, that doesn't matter. You're my buddies. You're my friends from age the youngest person in this room to the oldest person in this room. You're my tribe, and I love you guys so much, and I'm grateful to be a part of this. Thank you so much.
That was wonderful. Thank you, Marion. Now let's have Mark for the secretary's report.
Mark, I'm your recovered alcoholic secretary. Keeping with the seven tradition, which states that every group is fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions, the baskets are now going to go around. As the baskets are go around, I didn't ask a member to read the recovered statement, so anyone want to volunteer?
Cody.
Alcoholic named Cody. We are not cured of alcoholism, recovered but not cured. That presents a conflict to some alcoholics. If we were cured, we would be able to drink responsibly. No, we are not cured. The allergic reaction to alcohol will remain with us for our lifetime. But we have been restored to sanity. That was the problem. The main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in the body. We are now sane where alcohol is concerned. Consequently, we have recovered.
Thank you, Cody. So we read that note to explain why many people in the group identify as recovered rather than recovering, and exactly what it means to be a recovered alcoholic. It's 1940-style big book sponsorship from the Ford second edition, Alcoholics Anonymous. Of alcoholics who came to AA and really tried, 50% got sober at once and remained that way. 25% sobered up after some relapses, and among the remainder, those who stayed on with AA showed improvement. What we've seen, felt, came to believe, and experienced is that God has not changed over time, and neither should the sacred approach back to his loving arms. The statistics above suggest a 75% success rate. Can I see a show of hands of recovered alcoholics? All right, it's quite a bit. Does anyone need a sponsor in this room? No one? You? Can you stand up, please? Come on. So any of the people raising their hands of recovered alcoholics are going to get with you after the meeting, and they're going to take you through the work. All right? Oh, we got two more right here. Three more. Can you guys stand up? So we got some potential sponsees in the room for all recovered alcoholics. The last meeting of the month, we celebrate sobriety time. Anyone celebrating a year or more, stand up in place and announce their name and years. Anyone in the month of January? We have anyone? Yes, sir. So we got some other stuff going on here. Huh? Oh, we got one more. Go ahead. I'm sorry. So we have some other stuff going on. Oh, I can't see with these lights, so go ahead. I'm sorry. Justine, congratulations. Heather. Six. Go ahead. We got Heather with six. We got one more. Another one with six. I think I got them all. All right, so we have some other stuff going on. Broward County Intergroup, as you know, it's your one-stop shop for all your AA supplies, big books, medallions, other literature, I mean, everything under the sun. That has to do with AA. Volunteer opportunities. More information on that in the back. If you want a flyer, just please grab it if you want to do any volunteer work. Broward County Institutions Committee, part of service is giving back. If any of you guys want to, all the dates are up there. If any of you guys want to go to this meeting and get involved with doing service, bringing meetings into places where people can't get to meetings, that's where you're going to hear it about. AA's got talent, so if anyone has any Super Bowl Eve, or doesn't have any Super Bowl Eve plans yet, this is going on in Coral Springs, Florida. It's fun. I went 2 years ago, and it's fun. I mean, it's a really good time, so if you're free that night, check it out. Then we have the Spring Fling. If anyone has any award-winning chili that they pulled off Google, please, this is the appropriate place to bring it. So, another fun event. And then, this is our meeting, Monday night on the third floor. Please join us. We have a big book study that's going on. We'd love to have you there. Also, we have CDs, mugs, large print big books, little red books, and big book dictionaries for sale on that back table. Please check it out. We meet every Thursday, starting promptly at 7:15, and we ask that you be courteous and ready to begin at the sound of the bells. See you next week.
Just a quick reminder, there's a 75-foot no-smoking vape zone in front of the doors. When you leave here tonight, do not light up or vape until you are 75 feet from the doors, and there are buckets out there as well. We have tonight's session and all past speakers' podcasts online for free at alcoholicsandgod.org. I'd like to invite everyone to our Monday night big book study. And those who wish to thank Marion tonight, please line up down the center aisle. Let's close with the Lord's Prayer. Our Father,
who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory forever.
Thank you. See you Monday. Can't give you
This little light of mine, I'm gonna let it shine. Let it shine, 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 let it shine. Out in the dark,
Michael Chase, here's that song you've been asking me for a million years. I finally pulled it out the corners of my mind, and here you go. When I go to sleep at night and I dream now. Fear has left me and I'm standing tall. A pile of bricks now lies where once there stood a wall that I hid behind. For all this time, sometimes it takes a burning bush or a great white light to set you right. Well, my eyes don't cry now, my mouth is dry. Pity party's over, the guest of honor has arrived, and he's on my side. The first time in my life, are green now, growing vines. They twist and turn each way. Flowers blooming all the time outside my door. Never before I had to change everything to realize that today is the best day of my life. Broken man, I travel far and wide through the great divide, through his own heart, yeah. Well, I have a life today when you give away and it's just about to start. Show up and plug in my guitar, and I play my songs, and people sing along, and stomp their feet and raise their arms. And here in this moment that we share, nothing could come in. Lessons when I go to sleep at night and I dream now. Yeah, I dream now. And everything's all right. Oh, man. Going on 10 years old, that song is. God bless. I love you, Mike Chase. Bye.